welcome to Thriving as a Physician, the podcast that teaches you to thrive in your weight loss and life while juggling a packed physician schedule, because you deserve to thrive. Each week, I share sustainable, enjoyable tools that work in your busy life so that you can reach all of your goals faster with more confidence. Everything in this podcast is backed by my experience as an obesity medicine physician, years of coaching physicians on weight loss and eating, and my own personal weight loss journey. Let's get thriving. This podcast contains general educational information on weight loss for physicians. I am not providing medical advice, and listening to this podcast does not create a physician-patient relationship. This podcast does not replace the need for consultation with a licensed professional, and no information should be relied upon unless you have obtained specific advice or treatment from myself or another physician. Please review the terms and conditions located at www.weightsolutionsforphysicians.ca before continuing. Hello and welcome to episode 278 of the Thriving as a Physician podcast. I'm your host, Siobhan Key, and I've got a really good one for you today. We are going to talk about common stress eating myths, and we're going to debunk a bunch of them because there's so many thoughts about emotional eating, stress eating that are not actually true. And when we're believing things that aren't true about this, it makes it harder for you to actually find the things that'll work for you. So I think this is really important for us to hear what's not true and what are some different ways to look at it so that you can start incorporating ways that actually feel better that are also going to be more effective into your life so that you can feel more in control, more comfortable around food. So you don't have to fear that you're going to, you know, go into some food environment, be exposed to some food, lose control, which is a really common issue for a lot of the physicians I work with, where food becomes a bit of the enemy and it becomes this thing you have to be like afraid of what might happen if you're exposed to certain foods or if you're under certain stressors. When you start getting rid of the beliefs and the things we've been taught that definitely don't work, then it becomes easier for you to find the things that are going to work. So you don't live your life afraid of food. If you've been listening, you've probably heard the month of March, I'm doing free binge eating support. I'm calling it the Binge Freedom Bootcamp. And I'm teaching you really important foundational things about what binge eating is, how you can start to create change in it, and what pitfalls you want to avoid. And it's a combination of live sessions, workshop sessions, where you can ask me direct questions, plus tips, motivation, pep talks delivered in your inbox throughout the week so that you can stay focused on working on the positive change that you're working on creating. If you would like to join us, by the time you listen to this, we've already started, but don't worry, you haven't missed anything. Come join us. There's still a lot of support left in the month of March. Head over to weightsolutionsforphysicians.ca/binge. I would love to have you, especially if you're a physician who really identifies with binge eating. It's something you've struggled with. This month will really, really help you feel better about binge eating, feel more in control. Okay, let's back up just a bit about what is stress eating. How do you know if you stress eat? Because I think it's a little bit of a polarizing word, I would say. Some people are like, oh yeah, I definitely stress eat. Other people are like, oh no, I don't think the eating I do is stress eating because I don't experience stress when I'm eating. I would use this term. I think of stress eating, emotional eating as quite interchangeable, meaning times where you are eating not for hunger reasons. You're not eating because you physically are hungry and you need food energy. You're eating for other reasons. Often the term stress eating is used when you're eating for more negative emotions. You're feeling stressed, overwhelmed, tired, and that makes you reach out for food. So essentially, when you have emotional or stress eating, your brain is trying to fix something with food. Now, for some people, physicians in particular, we are so out of connection with our emotions that you may not actually realize that you are experiencing stress and that it could be driving your eating. So if you're like, I don't think I stress eat, but you have times where you feel out of control with your eating, chances are there probably is an element of emotional eating, and this topic will help you. All right, let's just dive right in to the myths. I've got seven for you, but I could probably keep going if I sat and brainstormed more of them, because there's a lot of myths with it. And the problem is the myths distract us from actually taking the path that'll work. You can absolutely feel more in control of stress eating. You can feel more comfortable and confident around food. But doing the same things we've always done are not the paths that are going to get you there. We have to think about our eating in a very different way in order to start feeling more empowered, more in control. So the first myth is that stress and emotional eating is a food issue. This is common. You perceive the problem to be when you are eating, so you think it must be the food. For me, it was my Wendy's French fries. If you've listened to the podcast, you've heard me talk about that so much. But for so many years, it was the Wendy's French fries. I thought I had a Wendy's French fry problem. I did not actually have a Wendy's French fry problem. I had a life problem, and my brain was trying to sort out that life problem, that complete lack of self-care, complete lack of time for myself with Wendy's French fries. I used to struggle with eating at night and pop big, big bowls of popcorn, make them elaborate, and sit down and eat it while I was watching TV after the kids went to bed. I thought I had a popcorn problem. I did not have a popcorn problem. I had a problem of not giving myself any time to have a break throughout that day and running my days like marathon problem. So when we are focused on the food, there's very little opportunity to actually fix it, because then you just get focused on, how do I stop eating Wendy's French fries? How do I stop eating popcorn at night? And you go through your day, you're like, okay, please don't have a Wendy's French fry craving because I don't know how to stop eating them. Or you're like, okay, please, I'm just going to try not to eat the popcorn after the kids get into bed. And then you're so exhausted once the kids are in bed and you're like, ah, screw it, I'm going to eat the popcorn because I can't care right now. And you eat the popcorn. And you end up stuck in that cycle because the belief that it ever was the food problem was wrong all along. And by focusing on the food, we are not able to see the real reasons why we're eating, why we feel out of control around those foods. It's not the food. If I had a popcorn problem, I would be like waking up in the morning, jonesing for popcorn, needing to pop it before I went to work, have a big bowl, pack some for lunch. I would always be thinking about popcorn. I didn't. I thought about popcorn and I felt out of control around popcorn at very specific times in my life. In the evenings, on days where I'd worked all day, ran home to get home to do kids stuff, did the marathon of kids stuff, finally got them to bed and collapsed, exhausted, and had like, you know, 1 or 2 hours to myself before I had to go to bed. That's what the popcorn was coming from. So whenever you catch yourself focusing on the food, remind yourself this isn't a food issue. The food is a symptom. It's not the true issue. We need to look at where is the desire to eat that food actually coming from. Second myth is that stress eating, emotional eating are bad. They're not bad. In fact, there are positive things that we actually sort of celebrate in our society that are actually emotional eating. We can eat from positive emotions. When you overeat at Christmas dinner, generally that's eating from a positive emotion. It's eating because of culture, memory, history of how you associate with that dinner. When you get together with friends and you have a little bit of extra, or you eat food you don't usually eat and it's part of the celebration, these things are actually part of normal human life and our social environment. And I think if we're thinking the stress eating and the emotional eating is bad all the time and we have to extinguish it altogether, what we're really saying is I have to remove myself from the social aspects of food. And that can be tough. And, you know, I've heard some people talk about that and talk about just totally separating yourself. So food completely is not a social issue. Your food is totally separate. And we're going to talk about that coming down. But I don't actually think it may work for some people. For me, it's not the way I want to live my human life. Now, the other piece about emotional stress eating isn't bad is the intention behind it is not bad. If we think it's bad, again, we miss out on the real reason. So if we think, heading to that drive-thru, man, why does my brain keep hurting me this way? Why does it keep sabotaging me in this way? These are the things I used to say to myself. and I think it's bad, then again, it's just this bad thing my brain keeps doing and I can't figure out why it keeps doing it because I'm missing the point. The emotional, the stress eating, the binge eating, if that's what you're dealing with, has a good intention behind it. Our brains do not ever do intentionally bad stuff to us. Our brain always suggests things that it thinks is either going to help you with your survival, help you feel better, or help you avoid pain. And so when we can look at it that way, okay, I notice that I'm eating the popcorn every night. What is it that my brain is trying to help me with this popcorn? And for me, and for many, many physicians that struggle with eating at night, it's exhaustion. It's feeling like there's no space in your life for you and your needs. It's procrastination because you know that you have notes to do and you don't actually want to spend your night doing notes. Sometimes it's trying to create space because there's such a little window of time where you feel like you've actually got time to yourself that the eating is trying to create some of that like treat and time to myself. It's always a positive intention. So no matter what eating you're dealing with, it is a positive intention. Your brain is not making you do that in order to hurt you. And when you start looking at what is a positive intention, you can start figuring out how you want to address that in a different way. If you don't want eating to be the way you address that, to meet that need, you get to then decide, okay, how do I want to meet that need in a different way? Number three, you can strong arm your way through. Man, who hasn't tried this? Like, how much energy and strong arming have you tried when it comes to your eating? How effective has it been for you? And yet we continue to believe. We're like, oh, I just need more willpower. I just need to work harder at this. I just need to make myself not eat that. Just need to make myself stop eating that. I'm guilty too. I have said all those things to myself. None of them worked. And I think if you look through your history, your personal history, if you reflect back, you'll realize strong-arming yourself never worked. Maybe it works for really short periods, like if you have a craving and you're like, okay, hang in there, we can do this. Don't eat, hang in there, keep going, ignore it, don't eat. And then you get to the other side and you kind of pass that one. And then the next time the craving comes, later that day, you're like, oh my God, I'm so exhausted. I can't do that again. All right, I'll just eat it. I'll figure it out later, right? The strong arming doesn't work because it A, doesn't feel good. B, takes way too much energy. And in the context of being a physician, having busy days, the amount of mental capacity, the amount of attention space you have, the decision-making capacity that you have available to your food decisions is minimal. And using the strong arm techniques wasted and often don't give you the results that you want. What actually works and what is totally possible when we start busting these myths and we start looking at the real reasons why we're eating is you can find ways to navigate your eating where you don't have to use the strong arm techniques, where you can find interventions earlier in the day so that craving to eat may actually fade away. That was one of the most powerful experiences I had early on in my journey when I started to discover coaching, was realizing that I had changed something about how I was thinking about my office day and just realizing, wait, I didn't feel the need to go through a drive-thru. It was a busy day, but I didn't feel the need to go through a drive-thru. And I hadn't tried to tell myself I didn't need to go through a drive-thru. Spent years telling myself, don't go through the drive-thru. And all of a sudden I made a change that had nothing to do with food. And that urge just didn't show up. That's the power of what we're talking about here. So what we do inside Thrive Academy when I'm working with physicians is where can we find those little interventions that seem to be so simple to do, they seem almost inconsequential. They seem to be totally unrelated to food, and yet they have a really big impact on food cravings and how your eating feels. Number four, and we've kind of talked a little bit about this, is food should only be fuel. Again, I see this perpetuated where people talk about, you know, just like focus on food being fuel. I have people come to me and they're like, I just want to eat for fuel. And the piece with that is I think it misses out on the humanity of us. It misses out on our human experience. The reality is food is a source of pleasure. It's a source of connection. It's a source of cultural celebration. We use food for a lot of other things than fuel. And yes, some of us also use it as a release valve when we're feeling really stressed, really exhausted, other emotions that we haven't otherwise managed. But thinking of food only as fuel, I think kind of might do you a disservice. Now, again, you do you. If you're like, it feels good to only think of it as fuel, fantastic. The thing I worry about and the thing I see happening a lot with physicians is the perfectionist thinking, where you're like, okay, my goal is to have food only be fuel. And then these other uses of food naturally show up, which is part of our natural human social experience. Then if you believe that the only way to be successful and the way you need to function around food is for it to only be fuel, it opens the door for you to beat yourself up about it and make it mean that you're not doing something right. And so I think, you know, there's times where you could focus on food mainly being fuel. But I personally choose for food to be fuel and also taste delicious so that I get enjoyment and pleasure from it too. Because my belief is I can have both. I can have my proverbial cake and eat it too, because I actually have really good low-carb cake recipes that I can enjoy and eat. Aside, I didn't want to drop a food pun and leave you hanging, or a food saying and leave you hanging. But my belief that I have built over the years is I don't actually have to choose one or the other. And to me, choosing food as only fuel feels a little bit wah-wah and a little bit like, oh, like if food is only fuel, I'm going to miss out on all sorts of enjoyment and opportunities in my life, experiences, new ones. Travel. For me, traveling, food is always embedded into that. So I've swung to the side of, oh, okay, maybe I just need to like totally separate everything in my life from the food. But over time and with more experience, I've actually swung back to the middle ground of being like, I can actually enjoy food. I can celebrate with food sometimes. I can be social around food. And I also can make decisions that support my body. It doesn't have to be one or the other. Sharing that, I know that's a little bit more advanced and not the exact topic for today, but just sharing it in case it's helpful for you to consider, what if that was true? How would that look for you? How would you need to think about food or approach food for that to be true for you? Number five is the myth is that the biggest issue to do with stress eating is a calorie intake. So the biggest problem is that you're eating food that you're not hungry for and maybe not the healthiest food, and it's giving you extra calories, which then is slowing weight loss or making you gain weight. That's not actually true. That's not how I see the biggest problem with this. The biggest problem with this is that being stuck in this cycle has you feeling disempowered, has you questioning your abilities when you are one of the most high-achieving, competent people in the world. That you literally can do anything you set your mind to. And yet this cycle makes you question yourself, makes you doubt yourself. That's one of the biggest problems. One of the biggest problems of this is that when you feel stuck in this cycle and you're feeling so out of control, you spend so much mental energy thinking about it, dreading it, maybe beating yourself up about it, without actually having effective ways of managing it. That's a cost to this. The other cost, and probably the biggest, is again, if we go back to this is happening because your brain is trying to help you with something. And if we think about that as an unmet need, one of the costs of being stuck in stress and emotional eating is you are probably not even aware of those unmet needs. So you as a human are going through your days not having your needs met until you reach this threshold that your brain's like, okay, let's just try and feel better. Let's reach for that food. And of course it does that. Nothing's going wrong. Of course it does that. But the impact that not meeting your needs has is your days feel worse than what they could. You can feel stuck where you're like, there's actually no space for me in my day. And that's a real shame because we work hard for these lives. You put a lot of work in to get where you are. You maybe have dreamed of being where you are, looked forward to it, and then sometimes the reality doesn't match what you thought it was going to be like. And if we assume that that's just the way it is, And we assume, yeah, this is like these days are tough and I don't have time to pee and I would love to do some hobbies, but there's no way I could do it. And man, I just can't stop eating at night. It means this life you've worked so hard for, you're missing out on it. It's not what you wanted it to be. And I speak with a lot of experience, personal and professional, that it could be so much better when we look at what are the real reasons why we're eating. Just think about that. If the eating is because there's unmet needs in my life, when I am just focused on the eating or just choose to try to strong arm through or beat myself up about it, the biggest disservice I'm doing to myself is I'm continuing a life where my needs don't get met. Now, that's a big topic. And I know some of you listening, you're going to be like, but there's no space. I literally cannot meet my own needs. And I get it. I've been there. I know what that's like. I've lived that life. And what I can tell you from the other side is we can actually meet our needs as physicians. Yes, it may take tweaking our days a little bit, but it doesn't usually mean having to give up a bunch of stuff and work in order to be able to meet our own needs. It doesn't mean you have to be an absent parent in order to meet our own needs. We sometimes think that's a case of, if I'm going to meet my own needs, I'm not going to be able to spend time with my kids and then I'm a bad mom. Like, it's all these things. And often what happens when we focus on meeting our own needs, there is more of us to go around. We think it'll take away from the people around us, but it actually creates more of us to serve and care for the people around us. We've replenished ourselves. So that is the biggest issue that I see. And this is why, honestly, why I spend time coaching. Why, when I'm not in the office, I'm doing things like this podcast and running Thrive Academy for Physicians, because I know that when we struggle with eating and weight as a physician, the pain is not just that, oh, you know, you've got some extra weight, or, oh, you're not eating healthy. The pain and the true reason why I'm so freaking passionate about doing this is these things are here because we've been taught not to actually care for ourselves. We've been taught to go and achieve and do amazing things externally while completely disregarding our own needs. And we could argue that some of that is needed as a physician. There are times we have to disregard our own needs, but nobody ever teaches us how to put our needs back into the equation when we're able to. So then we live our life not meeting our own needs, feeling like, I did all this, but I'm somewhat dissatisfied. I don't understand. I don't feel happy. And I can't stop eating. And when we can just start bringing our own needs back into the equation, the eating piece gets so much easier to solve and your days feel better. This is why coaching around your eating and weight actually makes your life better. And I know that's a huge claim when you've never done coaching, but it's totally true. That was a little side note, but it is so, so true. And I'm very passionate that we as physicians deserve to enjoy our life. And we can enjoy our life and also work on eating healthy and caring for the body that we have at the same time. They don't have to be mutually exclusive. In fact, they're very closely related. Number six, my little rant feeds into this one, guys. Number six is that doctors shouldn't stress eat, right? How much shame have you given yourself for feeling out of control around food? I'm going to like raise my hand here and say, I have given myself so much shame and guilt, especially because I had done my obesity medicine training and I was still struggling with my eating. And I was like, well, I've done the training. I've got the board certification. Why am I still struggling with this? There must be something wrong with me. Guess what? We stress eat because we're doctors. Medical school did not teach us one single thing, one tiny iota of a helpful thing to manage our stress eating. Med school taught us about the DASH diet, the food pyramid or the food guide, depending where you live. It taught us about things like that. But med school also is what taught us to disregard our own needs. Med school taught us to shove down our emotions, never deal with them, and leave ourselves in a place where we don't actually know how to deal with them. And so our brain suggests food as a solution. It makes total sense that you struggle with stress eating, emotional eating, binge eating as a physician. Complete and total sense. Your medical training does not protect you from this. Your medical training is a big piece of why you struggle with this. Even if you had some of these struggles before you got into medicine, my guess is it's probably gotten harder to manage since you've been in medicine. And that's because we are not actually taught anything about how to manage this as doctors. There is no medical school class about this. And we are taught a whole host of ways that we approach our day, of ways that we think of ourselves and how we operate within our lives, within our communities, that put our needs at the bottom of the pile. And guess what? When you have a busy day, which we all do most days, how often do you get to the things at the bottom of the pile? Almost never. So then your brain's like, hey, we're feeling crappy. What's a quick fix? How can we feel better fairly quickly? Well, some chips work. Grabbing some handfuls of candy from the cupboard seems to work. And your brain is right. Does help you feel better. It's just not the most effective fix because it doesn't last. I think that's an important piece to acknowledge too. Again, it's not that your brain's totally off base here. It is helpful in the moment. It does feel good in the moment. So if you're holding onto the shame about being a doctor who stress eats, binge eats, emotionally eats, whatever you identify with, it's time to let it go. It's not you. You didn't miss the class. They never gave us that class. Instead, we could think they gave us the class of top five things to do that will make it hard to control your personal health habits when you're older. That is the training we got in medical school. I'm just giggling in my head because imagine if they actually had that lecture. I'm picturing the PowerPoint slides. But, you know, it wasn't taught overtly. But the culture of medicine, a lot of this stuff is a given. And so we internalized it. And like I said, there are aspects that are important for us to do to be able to do our jobs properly. But we also need to learn the skill of when can I turn that off? And how can I actually let my needs come into this equation? Number seven, and the last myth that I want to talk about today is tough love will prevent future episodes. This is a common myth. And it's this belief that if you are not tough on yourself, if you do not really make sure you understand what you did wrong, well, then it's just going to be permissive and all heck is going to break loose. You're just going to keep going and going and going. So let's stop it by getting tough, telling yourself, don't ever do that again. That was wrong. You shouldn't have done that. Do you know what a big mistake you made? Look at how you blew it. Right? These things that I'm saying are a fraction of what you have probably said to yourself. I have cleaned this up because I'm actually not comfortable saying out loud the things that we will say to ourselves after we've eaten. The tough love never, ever is the solution. And I understand usually when I say this in trainings and stuff, physicians are like, oh, that's uncomfortable. Like, if I'm not being tough on myself, what's going to happen? Because there's a belief that the only way to prevent being permissive with yourself is to be tough with yourself. And the reality is being tough, saying horrible, mean stuff to yourself, making yourself feeling like a failure, feeling defeated, is what creates permissiveness. Because then you're like, oh, what's the point? May as well keep going. Doesn't really matter. I blew it already. Compassion does not create permissiveness. Compassion helps you understand why the behavior is there. It creates space for you to consider why it might be there. Tough love closes the door. There is, when you are beating yourself up and berating yourself about something you ate, there is no space to learn. There is no space to notice patterns. There is no space to consider how do I want to do it differently from a helpful and constructive standpoint. The only space is, what did I do wrong? And man, why haven't I learned this lesson? And you haven't learned the lesson because it was never about the food. And the tough love and beating yourself up about the food perpetuates that stress eating is a food issue. And it perpetuates a situation where you're actually missing the reason why you're eating and the unmet need that might be there. All right. We have covered a lot today. I hope that that was helpful for you. I would love to hear your thoughts. Send them to info@weightsolutionsforphysicians.ca. You will hear from me. I answer all my emails. And if you haven't checked me out on Instagram or Facebook, come follow me. I post tips on a regular basis, post little video clips, reels. Again, the more contact you have with these new ideas that I share, the more they start to feel a second nature, the easier they become to incorporate into your life, and the more results you see. So worthwhile making sure you're following so that positive messages like this show up on your Instagram feed. I'm at Dr. Siobhan Key. That's DrSiobhanKey on both Instagram and Facebook. And if you haven't already, come join us in the free Facebook group. That opens up to even more free content, tips, tricks, support from me. And that's the Thriving as a Physician Facebook group. Head over to Facebook, search for that, request access. You do need to be a physician to join. And if you love this podcast, I haven't asked for this for a while, but if you could just take the time to leave a review wherever you're listening, it would really help me out. Having regular reviews helps just support the podcast getting found by new people who haven't heard about it before. And along those same lines, if you know of a physician that struggles with this stuff, share the podcast with them, please. This information and the things we're talking about, like we talked about when I went on my little rant today, this is quality of life issues for us as physicians. It is not superficial. It is not vain. These have real quality of life issues and impacts for us. And so please share it with other physicians. We all deserve to understand how to manage this in a more positive way for us. All right. Have a fantastic day, guys. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.